You are now listening to Vigilantes Radio. The people's choice for quality art, interviews, special guests, music, and hot topics. Hosted by Demetrius D.D. Blast Reynolds and co-hosted by the Vigilantes. Pogosi, Subba Bra, Banditti, and Controvert. Call in to join the mix at 602-753-1654 or hop in via Skype by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/onlyonemediagroup. All episodes of this podcast are available for free download at www.onlyonemediagroup.com. Immediately after each broadcast, we welcome all. Topics and ideas, email us at theradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. Enjoy the show.
Wow, and another wow. We are up to 14,000 listeners, 865,000 downloads worldwide, and it's all because of you. We are the people who have dedicated their lives to music, art, and research in every aspect, and we want to allow you the opportunity to tell your story. We've had celebrities on our show, from Grammy Award-winning musicians to actors, authors, professors, and just all-around weird people. We love interviewing weird people, by the way. So it doesn't matter who you are or what walk of life that you come from, come on our show and talk to us. So to book your interview or just to share a story, email us at vradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. I am passionate about what I do, just as passionate about what you do. And together we can get your voice heard by the people that should hear it. So let's create something incredible. And with that, hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Vigilantes Radio. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and being a part of our audience family. If you like information on how to call in, ask questions, or speak to the guests, you can always dial 602-753-1654 or hop in the mix directly from Skype. You can use the app to dial in. Charges may apply from Skype, not us, Skype. Or for the best connection, you can listen to us by the browser at blogtalkradio.com/OnlyOneMediaGroup. And as always, all of our episodes are for free download. Yeah, man, we don't charge you anything to grab these interviews. You know, put them on your phone, your tablet, your PC, laptop, whatever you got, your MP3 player if you're still doing that. And you can listen to us on the go, especially if you want to archive the interviews. I use little snippets. It don't matter to me. As long as you download it, we definitely appreciate that. Well, tonight's episode is the Jason Achilles Mazzillis interview. Here with us on Vigilantes Radio, and I'm your host, Houdini Black. The first song we played was by an artist named Best, and the title song was named Beautiful. Very simple, to the point. So, good job, Best, and, you know, wonderful title, Beautiful. So, with that, we're going to take a brief intermission. And for you guys that are in the chat room, I see about a little over 1,000 in the chat room. What's up? What's up? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to post some pictures of Jason, and I'll let you guys check it out. And if you click on the episode's information, you can see his website, his Facebook, his Twitter, Instagram, and also a link to purchase his album. And a little bio, too. So, yeah, check them out and let me know what you think in the chat room. We'll be here to talk with you guys. So if you have any questions, just type them out to me and I'll get to them as the show is rolling. But with that said, we're going to call Jason Jam for short. Three names, Jam. So here's Jam, Come Down. Thank you. Okay, well, if anything, I can personally hope that we learn a ton from this interview. The mind of Jason is a unique one. Even though I thought I knew a bit about his latest album, Come Down, I now know that I still have way, way more to learn, and we do get that chance to do so through this interview, and we hope for success. The results, of course, will not be just a victory for me, but for all of us. There's a ton of great ideas, explanations, and hopefully some great perspective here from Jason. So fully dig this interview. Check it out. We are live right now. So hello and welcome, Jason. We're stoked to have you on our podcast here, and thanks for sharing some time with us. Much appreciated. We've taken some time to research you, listen to the music, and find out what you're all about. But before I give too much of my own impression away, let's get your own impression and ideas of what Jason is all about, what separates you from the rest of the instrumental music out there, and how do you go about creating something unique we've never heard before? Like what makes the Come Down special and different from the rest of what's going on out there?
Hello. That was quite an intro. Thank you, man. Nice to meet you. And thanks to everybody for listening in. What was the question? Can you hear me
basically,
okay?
Yeah, we can hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay. Hello, everybody.
What separates you from the rest of the instrumental music out there?
Oh, right.
And how do you go about creating something unique?
Well, you know, it's interesting. This is kind of my first. It's the first time I've ever done this, I've always been in bands. I've always wanted to be in bands. I am in a band now that I perform with called Owl, but we haven't played in a while because our singer tours a lot, and so he's been working a lot this year. But I had a former band that split up. And that's when I started doing this instrumental record. It was really just to keep myself from going crazy. I mean, you know, relatively speaking. And it took like 5-6 months to finish the record. And at that some point along there is when I realized that this was going to be, you know, a full album release. But yeah, this is actually the first time I've really done something like this. I never sort of set out to be an instrumental artist. So it's as new to me as it is to you guys.
Yes, sir. All right, man.
Well, you were asking what made it a sort of a different approach, I guess. I record a lot of bands here in Los Angeles as a producer. I have my own recording studio, which is where I did this record as well. But the thing that sort of sets this record apart from a lot of others is I took an old school approach and I did the whole record entirely in the analog recording medium. So the whole record's done on tape.
Oh, wow.
On a 16 track tape machine. And I mean, as far as I even edited the thing with, you know, a razor blade cutting tape like you would whatever 25 years ago. That's a pretty different approach, and also why it probably
Definitely.
Took a lot longer.
I was going to say, I remember recording on a DAT machine some odd years ago, maybe 12 years ago. This guy, he still had, like, the tapes, and, you know, it was totally analog, but I remember doing that.
I got my stack of DAT tapes. I got I even have ADAT tapes of records I did, but this one I actually went even farther back than that and did, you know, actual magnetic tape. The thing that's cool about the record is that every performance is in fact a performance, you know, it's not spliced together. It's not edited together. Well, if it's edited together, like I said, it's the old school way of doing it. But so if you listen close, you'll hear mistakes and you'll hear screw ups and you'll hear like little things that are a little off. But to me, when I listen back to all my favorite bands, like, I don't know, like Led Zeppelin is a perfect example, you know, or even like old Van Halen records where you've got Eddie, who's, you know, the guy's a genius guitar player. I mean, he's a virtuoso. And he would screw up on the albums and they would just leave it in there, you know, because it felt good. And I feel like that's something that gets washed over a lot now. Like people are, I think, a little too obsessed with fixing all the problems. And I don't think necessarily that perfect music is perfect music, if that makes sense. I like the little things like a note that bends a little too far, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's what gives it character, I think. So that's kind of why I went this route.
Yeah, definitely.
Plus, it was just really fun to do. I like working with tape, so.
Yes, sir.
So there you go.
It sound like it's a live performance. Yeah, to me, it makes it sound like it's a live performance versus a can record, you know. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's definitely not canned, that's for sure. I mean, it was a hell of a, like,
yeah.
So for example, that song, the opening track we just heard, that was one of the, that was the one song on the record where I actually did not play the bass. A buddy of mine named Jason Sirocco came up with that bass line when we were rehearsing for a show, and we turned that into a song and played it the next night, actually. So he's playing the bass on that song. I made him play that bass line over and over and over till he got it in one take. So that bass line that you hear is a full performance take of him doing it. And I think we did it 5 or 6 times in the studio. And then once he nailed it, you know?
Nice.
So there's little things in there and there's little moments, but it's a real bass player playing a real instrument, you know, and it lends that feel to it. Anyway, he's a great bass player too. So that helps.
Yeah, man. That's cool. All right. For my listeners out there, we can, if you like let's say like fruit, if you like better organic fruit, like fresh off the fruit truck, Jason is your man. But if you prefer that canned music, you know, go ahead and get canned music. But we prefer organic here.
This is the
anyway,
imperfect apples with the little wormholes in them occasionally, yeah.
All right, trance music has been a staple of the scene for years. I'm assuming that all kinds of electro have probably been appealing to try to make and create over the years as you refine your skill set. So what is your official genre?
You know, that's a really good question. I guess you'd call it instrumental rock. I don't really know. I'm still sort of trying to gauge. I mean, this record just came out a month ago, and it's still kind of on the underground scene. It hasn't, you know, I think I'm getting my first radio play this week, like on your show, and there's a few other stations across the country that are playing it, but this week is kind of the first week it's even hit the radio. So I'm kind of waiting to gauge people's reaction and see what they think it is. I mean, that song you opened up with, obviously it doesn't sound like a rock song. You know, there's not really, the drums in it aren't, we actually approach that more like you would, like an orchestration. So the drums are doing just swells and cymbal swells, like, and rolling on the toms the same way an orchestra would if it were, you know, playing a classical piece, you know, just swelling with it. So, but I use the instrumentation of a rock album. So I guess you could say, you know, it's a basic setup. It's electric guitar, it's drums. It's a big, you know, big drum set, Bonham-sized kick drum. I guess you just call it instrumental rock. Yeah, I don't know. If somebody has a better name for it, though, please let us know. unless you say it's crap, in which case you can keep it to yourself.
But no, as we go on through the show, we'll play more, you know, cuts from your album.
Okay, great.
You know, our listeners will be able to, you know, cipher for themselves what, you know, because to me there's a blend of all kind of genres here. There's electric, electronic rock. There's what I call some airy alternative sounds in there. So, I don't know. To me it's a mixture. I mean, I can hear the rock influence on a lot of the records, but there's some other elements there too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, let's see. Let's see what you said. There's what, about 1,000 people in the chat room right now?
Yeah, man. That's just a chat room. That's not, you know, the phone lines or the browser. That's just what I can see.
Well, I was gonna, but that's definitely enough people to have some. Somebody's got to have an opinion, right?
Yes. <sir.
laughs> Yeah. So you let us know. You out there listening, let us know what the hell this stuff is. Help us out.
Right. Was there something about this style of music or a particular side to the music that made you want to create it? Or was there something that you thought the genre needed that you could bring to it? Or just in general, what made you take on instrumental music as opposed to any of the other genres? Why was it more appealing than the rest?
Well, the instrumental choice was, like I said, really much out of necessity, you know, just having a voice where I needed to create something and literally not having a singer. When that other band that I was telling you broke up, we actually had a show booked a month later, and they basically called and said, are you doing the show? And I said, yes, but it's not the band, it'll be me. And they said, what are you going to play? And I said, don't worry about it. So basically I hung up the phone, and then I was like, okay, shit, I better write some music here. So it really kind of, there really wasn't much time to even think about it. It was just kind of like, you need to create something right now, you know, because you just painted yourself in this corner and somebody's expecting something from you. You know, like if somebody said, go write a story, and you said, okay, I'll have to do it tomorrow. And then you have to sit down and be like, what the hell am I going to write? You know? I don't know. I've always loved movie soundtracks. I've always loved just the sound of music, kind of regardless of the genre, just like the sound of the guitar, like that first song you played just now. I don't know. It's just, I didn't really think about it like a genre. I just sort of thought about it as kind of layering and texturing and stuff that I wouldn't normally do. I don't know. To be totally honest with you, I'm not trying to give an abstract answer, but it was just sort of like move forward. Every song was completely different in the approach. So, I mean, I don't know which song you want to play next, but whichever song you pick, it's going to be pretty different from that one, you know, because they're all pretty different. But as far as the instrumentation of it, that's what I love listening to. I love listening to, you know, a beautiful sounding electric guitar, nice bass guitar, the big, you know, Led Zeppelin sized drum kit, and then the keyboards. There's some keyboards on other songs in this record, which I don't know if anybody out there is a fan of the band Genesis. But that's one of my favorite bands in the world. And I kind of went for that late 70s, early 80s Genesis, Tony Banks keyboard sound. So it was kind of like pulling, you know, like early 70s drums, late 70s keyboards, maybe like like Jeff Beck styled guitar sounds and swells. Kind of cherry picked from a few different genres and sort of put them together. So I guess, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's the best answer I got.
Cool deal, man. So it got to be some exciting times for you right now. You've got this brand new album, Come Down, that came out in June of this year, a seriously wild rock and ride through 7 brand new songs. You've got to be stoked right now. That is usually an incredible time in any artist or band's life, so I imagine things are going great right now. I want you to walk us through your whole mental process and day-to-day activities in preparation for the month of the release leading up to the night before the official drop date.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Okay. It's every day is completely different. I can walk you through the last 24 hours. So just to give you an idea, I haven't slept since yesterday morning. I'm just fried on coffee right now because it was 2 in the morning last night and I was ready to go to bed and I was tired. And then I realized that I had all these emails I had to answer and I had all the, you know, like just stuff to my publicist, stuff to my booking agent, stuff to all these different people. And next thing I know, it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Then I had a phone meeting that lasted like 2 hours. And then I had to do some other work for half of the day to try and actually, you know, make some disposable income so I can pay for all this other crap to hire all these people. And now I'm on with you after having a rehearsal this afternoon for another thing that I'm doing with a buddy of mine. It's kind of like that, but completely different every day. I love it. I love the chaos of it, but it's hard to sort of quantify it in a regular way. I mean, what's amazing about doing something like this, and I'm sure any sort of business owner who's started their own business out there knows it's complete chaos. It's completely different all the time, but every day you can look at yourself and realize that, like, you know, what you're creating is Like, you're really creating something you believe in. And at first, nobody believes in it. So that's the hardest part, you know, is putting all your energy into something and all you've got is a crazy idea, you know, and maybe a product, you know. Like, I had the record. The record's been done for a year, but it took me a year to actually get it released, and I wanted to wait and do it in the proper way. So I waited a year to build up a team of people. I have, like I said, a publicist, a booking agent, a licensing company, you know, all these things. And I guess the hardest part is you just don't know the whole time if it's going to work or not. And yeah. So the big anxiety putting it out, I don't know about anxiety. It's kind of exciting too, but you're just kind of like, I don't know if anybody's going to like this stuff, you know, but you believe in it. And it basically comes down to either you're completely crazy and wrong or you're crazy and you're right. And yeah, it's been incredibly exciting. I mean, you know, like I said, I haven't slept in, you know, whatever, 36 hours or however the hell long it's been. And I'm totally excited right now, just even talking about it and talking with you. You know? But I don't know. I don't think I need sleep the way other people do. So it's, maybe that's not a good example. I don't know. Again, I don't know if that really answers your question, but it's just kind of controlled chaos that you, it's like you're in a ship and it's like a crazy storm and you're just trying to kind of keep the ship steering in the right direction, even though you're getting knocked around from winds from all sides. But some of those winds are strong enough to come from behind you and really push you towards your goal. Whereas other stuff comes from the side and really threatens to knock you over all the time. So it's not a peaceful, boring ocean. I can tell you that.
Yes, sir.
So there you go.
We're pretty excited to have you on the show too, man. So tell us about this combination of talent between both yourself and Brett Rocha, Aroka.
Oh,
what makes it
Rocha. Yeah, Brett Rocha. Yeah, Brett is amazing. He was, at the time we recorded this record, he was 23 years old. I mean, he's a brilliant young player. And, Brett, poor Brett. Okay, so I don't know how many people in the audience that are listening right now are actual musicians, but just to give an idea of what I put that poor kid through, every track on this record, he had to perform the drums completely naked. So by himself with no click track, no backing tracks. And we kind of fleshed out the ideas, but then I just made him play the song like a drum solo. And I would basically stand in front of him, kind of conducting him through where the changes are. And he's watching me, you know, while he's, of course, you know, trying to give him, you know, a really solid performance. But his feel and the way he attacks the drum and just hits the drum there's a bigness to it. That's a bad word, but there's a way he plays where the kit sounds large, you know, and it has this weight to it. And he's credited with a co-write on every one of these songs, because without his specific feel, the record would not be what it is. Like every track, if you listen to it, the way the drums feel. And I know a lot of amazing drummers in Los Angeles. You know, there's so many great players here, but his feel in particular for this project was the like the magic, you know, the heavy pixie dust, I guess, if you will. And I love that kid. That's basically it. I mean, it's really like they would talk about with Bonham and Zeppelin, you know, is when they never tried to replace him, because when they lost him, they lost the sound of that band. I'm indebted to Brett for his work on this. He's wonderful.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to take a real quick music break and catch our breaths. But in the meantime, we're going to play some more music from Jason. We have Ghost Part 1 queued up. Let's get to it, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back from our break with the one and only Jason Achilles Mazellus, and that was his song Ghost Part 2. So, Jason, how about when it comes to the workload in general? Of course, we know that making music isn't really something we consider to be work of any kind. Even as hard as it gets, it's still hopefully fun and something we all want to do. But when it comes to how the composition went for come down to social media updates, website maintenance, touring, guest appearance on other artists' projects, when it comes to how much jam or how much Brett was on the track, did you both play a part in a big part in the make of the album? Or if one of you had to finish had a finished track that was ready to go, would that still be considered? Do you always work alone, or do you always work together? I know that's a bunch of questions in between a bunch of other questions.
yeah, that was a lot of questions. Okay, let's see here. So what you're just like asking about the general process of how we did this, or?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit to, you know, the overall workload. Like, I know the music part is like the easiest thing to do sometimes. But after it's all said and done, we have to really do the work of, like, updating pictures and websites and stuff like that. Like, do you consider that part,
the vlog,
you know,
work,
the biggest workload? How do you manage it
all? Oh, there you are. What's that? How do I what now?
How do you manage all of that?
I don't sleep. That's pretty much it. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's interesting when you're working on the record and you're into it, you know, all your hours of the day. I mean, you can devote your full time to doing it, you know, being in the studio. And it actually, I mean, when you're making a record this way, the music part can be very difficult. It's fun in the sense that it's really rewarding when you get it right. But when you're spending, you know, 3 days trying to capture one part and you're ready to, like, you know, throw your guitar out the window and go quit music and, you know, be a ditch digger. I wouldn't say that's fun, but it's ultimately everything is rewarding. You know, as long as you push to not quit until you're happy with it, if that makes any sense.
Right.
But once, like, now that we're in the cycle of promoting it and you know, like you said, all the business stuff, like, I mean, I have so many new songs that I want to get recorded, and I literally have not had time to go into the studio and do them because I'm, like, right now, I made vinyl. I actually pressed vinyl as well as have CDs, and now I got T-shirts. All these people over the last few months have ordered all these things, and I got to get them all mailed out, and they're, you know, I've got to sit here and like package these things, stamp them, send them out. That's going to, just doing the mailings is going to take days. And I'm starting to get messages from people this week saying, hey, where the hell's my record that I ordered, you know, two, 3 months ago. And they just arrived, you know, I just got them. So now I got to get them done before I leave town. And then I'm going on tour soon. I got to get these things mailed out or, you know, all these fans and all these people that, you know, they're going to kill me. I got to get them the records, you know? So, it's just, I don't know. Yeah, I just don't sleep much. But again, I'm definitely not complaining. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been this happy, but I've also never, I don't think I've ever really worked this hard at something either. So, what was your second question?
The second part of the question basically went towards, like, we know Brett helped you a lot on the album. Is he helping on the promotion side of it as well?
No, that's not his responsibility at all because it's my name. You know, I wouldn't saddle him with that. And actually, he got picked up. He's been on tour as a hired guy. He's been touring all across the States. He's been touring all through Europe with a band. Took him on the road and I had to let him go and do that. You know, I mean, he's young and he's on the road and it's awesome for him, you know. And we'll definitely, you know, at some point I'm going to get him to be part of my touring band too. Since then I've had to call up. Actually, I have another very good friend of mine named Keith Larson, who is stepped up to the plate for like sort of like all the live shows recently. We just did a tour here. We just did our first tour recently, a few weeks ago. And he's going to be doing another one with me on the West Coast. I'm going to be touring the East Coast in October, and I've got to get a completely different band for that because I'm not to a point yet where I can fly band members across the country, you know. So I'm finding guys on the East Coast that are friends of mine. And so I got to get there a couple days early, teach them the songs. We got to rehearse it a bunch, make sure that it actually sounds smooth, you know, and to the point where people can really loose play, you know, be loose and play with their own feel. So yeah, what was the question again?
I think you answered it, brother.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, my brain is a little loose today. I apologize.
Oh, you're all good.
So what was part three of all that?
There was no part three.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
All right. Fill us in on Ghost Part 1 and Part 2. Like, what's the backstory?
Yeah.
And is there going to be a Part 3 in the near future?
You know, that's actually, nobody's ever asked me that before. That would be kind of a cool idea. You know what? That's actually a really cool idea. Sure, maybe there will be. If there's going to be a Part 3, it would have to be, I think it would probably be something that I would come up with an idea, and then as it was coming together, if I realized that, hey, this actually kind of sounds like it could be a continuation of that, then it would become a Part 3. I don't think I'm going to set down specifically to write Part 3 to that because, it, you know, Part 1 and 2 kind of resolves itself in its own way, you know, musically. But the inspiration for the Part 1 and Part 2 of that is actually very specifically from a Genesis record that, you know, the band I was talking about earlier. On the record Abacab, there's on the first track on side B, you know, if you're listening on cassette, which I used to, is a two-part song like that where the feel changes drastically. It's called Dodo Lurker. It's this kind of quirky thing, but it also has that monster drum sound and everything, and a lot of it is very instrumental. And I sort of took the inspiration for Ghost Part 1 and 2 off of that song. In particular, you know, a lot of the keyboard sounds and like to almost to the point where I hope they don't sue me. But hey, you know what? If Genesis is listening to my record, I'm doing something right in the world. So, yes, but yeah, that's kind of where that came from. It was very directly inspired by, as an idea from that track off of that album.
Okay. Give us a highlight or two from the recording sessions of Come Down. Somewhere along the way, there had to be some new exciting breakthroughs or just general good times. What memories would you take away from making this album, and what did you learn throughout the process that will help you next time around when you go to record your next record?
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know, the song you just played on part two was if you listen, there's something that sounds like a horn section in that song that came in sort of in the choruses, and then there was that Stevie Wonder breakdown part where all the music was playing together. That actually is a horn section, and I had never done that. I'd never recorded a horn section in my life. I'd never arranged a horn section. I didn't know how the hell to do it. I had it in my head. That's supposed to be a very Stevie Wonder moment, like mid-70s, Inner Visions, you know, era Stevie Wonder. And so I heard it in my head. I knew I wanted it. I had no idea how to do it. And it was a terrifying experience because horn players, it's not really a circle I travel in. So I don't know a lot of horn players. So I had to hire these local guys. And they were fantastic, but they're, you know, you're paying them by the hour. They're in there. And I basically had them, I think, for 2 hours, figure these charts out, record it. And again, I'm only using 16 tracks total. So I have three horn players. I had them play the part four times, and then I, you know, sort of bounced all that down into a stereo track. This is a little technical, but we had to rehearse the part, make adjustments in the performance, see if they could read my ridiculous charts, because I, you know, even like you're writing in instruments, when you're writing for orchestra, some instruments like you, the, when you write a C, it actually sounds as a different note. So, you know, I had to learn all the, you know, how to transpose things for the different instruments. Hopefully write it, you know, they, of course, because they're professionals, they could read through, like, you know, the mistakes that I made and whatnot. But we basically had 2 hours to rehearse it, figure the part out, make adjustments, and then actually record it, get it balanced sounding, and dump it all down onto the tape in such a way that it freed up the tracks for the rest of the layering. In all that in 2 hours. And I filmed that whole process. I had a friend, my friend Yoko came down and videotaped it. And I was terrified going into that it was just going to be an utter failure and I was going to blow and it was going to sound terrible. And it worked. So it sounds amazing. I mean, they killed it. There's a lot to learn from that, but I think one of the most important things is if you need a professional part done right, make sure you hire professionals, which I was smart enough to do, and they were worth every penny. So.
Yes, sir. All right. You're in the world of instrumentals as well as being a part of the rock music scene. So tell us about expression without words in music, if you can. Are you able to express the emotions that you feel inside without having to add lyrics to the music?
I actually can't express emotion with words. Yes. The answer is yes. And it's for me, it's totally natural that way. I obviously I can express myself, you know, pretty well in a conversational way, like with you now. But when it comes to poetry, you know, I got nothing. Anytime I ever listen to a song on the radio, I still to this day don't know the actual true lyrics to probably half of my favorite songs. I just know what they sound like. I know what the, like, where the vowels punch, and I know it makes me feel a certain way. But, like, for example, if you ever go to a karaoke bar, right, and you see people up there and they're singing the lyrics to a song, and you're reading the lyrics, right, while they're singing, and you're thinking, oh, that's what they're saying, the song. I never knew that. For me, pretty much every song in the world is like that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's totally natural for me. For me, I can sit and play, and that's my voice. I enjoy singing in bands, singing the harmony parts, I've never written a lyric in my life. And the one time I tried, it was so terrible. I am not a poet.
All right. Furthermore, when going this route, do you feel like you can get the full ideas or concepts across without ever having to say one word? Or do they become like half expressions in a way like the audience is left to fill in the blanks with our own imaginations? I guess what I'm asking this time is whether or not you can say it all without saying a word when it comes to music. Why or why not?
Yeah, definitely. When I'm performing in front of a crowd, you know, I'll have a microphone there. I'll say some words to the audience just to say hi and, you know, engage them in a personal way, you know, just so they understand, you know. But as far as the performance and the music coming across itself, yeah, absolutely. I think it, and it's, as we're doing more live shows, you know, the voice of the instrument, you know, is I'm getting a better understanding of how to put that across. Because it's one thing to record songs in the studio. And, you know, when I recorded these songs, I actually never considered how I would play them live. And when we're performing, like this last tour I did, it was just myself, a bass player, and a drummer. And I'm playing the guitar and the keyboard, and a lot of the times I'm actually really doing both guitar and keyboard at the same time, just trying to cover all these different parts, you know. So I would say the only difficulty has been like a technical difficulty of like, okay, how am I physically going to do this, you know, set up. I use pedals, like loop pedals. So you can, you set a pattern and then you click on it and then you grab the guitar real quick and then you start sort of playing the voice over it. And then when it changes, you turn that one off. It's sort of like tap dancing with all these different little pedals in front of you. So that's been the difficulty. But it's not a performance thing. It's It's a technical thing, if that makes any sense.
Yes, sir. All right. You've come with such
it's hard to do. It's really hard to do when you get drunk.
Ah, yeah.
Definitely. We did a couple shows where I was a little nervous, and I had maybe one too many beers before I started playing, and I was like, okay, can't do that.
Definitely.
Sorry, what were you going to ask?
So there's so many sounds and textures, you know, throughout Come Down, your album. Where do you find all of these sounds?
You know, I found them all with a very minimal amount of equipment. For me, what I find really inspiring is to use, like, okay, if you were to use the analogy of a painter, right?
All right.
You could have, you know, you might have a painter, you might have like 30 different colors of paint, right? And then you have your canvas and you can, you know, you have all these different options. What I like to do is have 6 colors of paint and then combine those in as many different ways as I can. To me, that's more inspiring. I would much rather have less colors and then try and squeeze as much different, inspired whatever out of that small amount of colors. So that's my approach personally, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. What kind of equipment are you using?
So, well, we recorded everything on a 16-track 1-inch, tape machine, which means you have 16 individual elements that you can combine. And like, just to give an example, the drum set itself tapes half of those. So that leaves me 8 other tracks to layer. You know, one's going to be the bass. One might be a lead guitar. One might be a melody guitar, and then keyboard tracks or overdubs, you know, percussion things. As far as the actual, the instruments, it's pretty limited. I used a couple different guitars. My buddy Ryan Bontrager had given me this old Silvertone slide guitar from like the 60s, and I used that for just like a few. There's a slide solo in Ghost Part 2 that I just used on that one part because it has a specific sound to it. Most of the guitar was recorded through this old Marshall amp that I have and a cabinet that I actually made with my father like many years ago. It's a homemade guitar cabinet, actually. So there's definitely some custom design stuff in there. The keyboard, there's 2 different keyboards I used. One was an old Wurlitzer, which I recorded through a guitar amp, kind of dirty it up a bit. And then I have this old crazy Yamaha. It's a CS70M. I think it's a relative of the keyboard that they used to record all of R2-D2's sounds in the original Star Wars movie. That's how old this thing is. And I've literally owned this thing for I can't even remember how many years ago I got it. And it's been sitting in my closet waiting for some day when I'd find a use for this thing. And then when I started doing this record, that's when I dug it out and literally had to like dust the thing off and get it working again.
Oh wow.
But it's a pretty small array of stuff. I think that pretty much covers it, yeah.
All right. Well, let's take the track that I love as an example. I thought Tokyo Drift was completely awesome in sound and a real highlight in just how many. Oh, you're welcome, man. And there were so many different ideas
nice
that you incorporated into the music. So tell us about how that track came together, what inspired it, and what made it come to life.
Okay, so yeah, that's actually a perfect example. So when the track starts, you hear this keyboard part that's playing over and over, and that is this old-ass keyboard. It has this thing called an arpeggiator built into it where you can set a pattern, and then you hit a button, and then it just loops the pattern. And I was just kind of messing around. You can do it in real time while you're you can create the loop and then it'll loop it while you're doing it. And then you can start playing on top of it. So that song basically came together as I was improvising over that loop. And then after that, once I sort of the actual writing of the song came together in probably 5-10 minutes. It was pretty quick. And actually, on that song is the one song where I played the drums as well, which is why they're so much quieter on that song than all the others. So I got the loop part set with that old keyboard, and it has a very specific sound, you know, that old, it has that weird old vintagey sound to it. And then the drums, I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with a composer named Vangelis. But he did this. He's a movie composer. He did the Blade Runner soundtrack, Chariots of Fire. He's a Greek composer. He's brilliant. And but if you listen to the song Chariots of Fire, there's a drum sound in it. This hi-hat thing. This cha 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 cha. You know, this like soft, undulating wave type of sound. And I literally stole that idea exactly, and that is the drum part for that song. So basically stealing a lot of ideas from different places and putting them together. That's how that came about.
See, definitely. So you're going out on the road in October, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
All right. Once the calm down hype fades, what is the next move for you?
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time?
Yeah, I said once the hype from the album fades away, what's your next move?
Well, I hope it's still building for a while. the plan is to, I'm definitely going to be touring through this one through the end of the year. I may have to take a break towards the end of the year and play some shows with the band Owl that I was telling you about earlier. We were talking about doing some stuff in December. And then I'm going to be looking to touring more into the next year as well. You know, I want to take the album cycle as far as I can. And basically, while I'm doing that in the downtime, I'm going to try and get some of these new ideas recorded. So the goal is to basically, tour through this as much as I can while at the same time, you know, preparing for another release, I hope, you know, if it comes together and if this one is received well enough. It's all a work in progress, you know, so we'll see how it comes together. But so far, it's been great. And if it continues to build the way it's been building, then it's gonna go for a while.
Definitely. Were there any expectations surrounding the release of Come Down as far as the results go? I definitely know it can be, you know, like out there as far as listens, downloads, and plays go. It can be tough to get the results you want, even in the most stunning situations for any artist or band. If Come Down didn't rack up a huge ton of downloads or plays, et cetera, would that discourage you or lead you to change directions in the future?
It would definitely have been discouraging, yeah. Thank God it didn't happen. As far as change direction, I don't know, you know, because if a record doesn't succeed, it's hard to know if it's the fault of the music. It could be the fault of a million different things. It could be the fault of not promoting it right. It could have been the fault of, I don't know, you know. But I believe that as much as possible, you do have control over these things, you know, especially if you're able to create something that is really good, or at least that you think is really good. As it was, I mean, this record ended up actually charting on the iTunes independent rock charts for the first 2 weeks, which is something I don't even know how that happened. I couldn't believe
it. Wow.
So
congratulations.
I mean, it was like, who the hell's buying this thing? Who even knows about this? You know? I mean, I've done some pretty cool stuff, and nothing that I don't know. I don't even know how it's been received the way it has been. So, I know that I'm pushing in every angle that I can, you know, and I've been getting some really great response, but, it's been way more than I expected and definitely as good as I could have hoped. Yeah. So there you go.
All right. With you saying that, is that adding pressure to your idea that you want to put out later on?
I wouldn't say it adds pressure to it. I think it's just, because I know that I'm in complete control over what I put out, so it's just a matter of working at it till it's done. I mean, it's, you know, on one hand, you can think of it like it's this artistic, vague thing, but to me, music isn't that. To me, music is the same way a carpenter might look at building a door, you know? I mean, you can tell when it's, if you're building a door, and you cut it and you physically, you know, okay, does it fit in the frame? Yes. Does it look like it needs to according to design? Yes. Okay, then you do the finishing. Okay, now you put the screw on. Does it open and close? Does it squeak? There's all these things you can look at as a craftsman, and you can tell when the damn door is done, you know?
Right.
And I think maybe the thing that's hard for somebody who's not a musician to understand is, for me, music is like that. Like, I can tell when it's done, which is, I think, maybe that's just the way my brain is wired, you know? So it's not really, I don't think it's really, it's not a concern of pressure. It's just a, like, oh, okay, this is going to be a lot of work, you know?
Right.
I mean, I think, and hopefully what my opinion of what is done and complete will continue to resonate with people. I think that's the only thing. It's not really an anxiety, but it's, you never know. I mean, just the same way you could build this beautiful door and, like, I don't know, is anybody ever going to buy that damn thing? Well, I don't know. It's a new design. We'll see, you know?
All right. Well, before we go into our open floor, we're going to take a few calls. Let's see if they want to ask you anything, Jason.
Oh, is there actually anybody who wants to ask me something? That'd be great.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if they do.
Nah, we'll just keep talking.
We'll see.
We'll play some Van Halen tunes or something.
All right, caller 802-274, you're live.
Hey, Jason.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Nice. Hello.
It's Angie Parr.
Hey, Angie, how you doing? All right, so
hey,
those listening... Angie is a fan of the band Owl from over on the East Coast.
Yeah,
and
I can't wait to see you guys. So you are going to be coming to the East Coast with your current music in October, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. It's actually nice that you're calling, because I haven't made any official announcement about this yet. But yeah, the dates are going to be October 5th through 16th, and we're still locking in some dates, but I can tell you that I actually just booked, I'm doing a double header in New York City. We're going to be doing two shows on, I think it's Sunday, I want to say a Sunday, October 9th, is that right? Playing the Rockwood that afternoon, and then Arlene's Grocery that night, and both in Manhattan there in the east side. Well, I'm not
awesome.
Sure where the Rockwood is, but...
I've got friends that live down there, so I'll definitely try to make those dates.
Where are you? What city do you live in again?
I'm in Vermont.
Okay, yeah. Well,
moment.
Check the schedule too, because there might be something even closer to you. I mean, definitely you should come to the New York shows, because those are going to be
If you go back towards the Albany area, then that's obviously a lot closer for me too. But yeah, I mean, I've got friends that live down there, and I've been trying to get an excuse to get back down to the three,
got an excuse.
I know, I have an excuse.
Yeah.
No, I've been listening to music. I think it's really awesome, all the instrumental stuff that you've been doing, and I think it's really funny how you've been comparing creating music to art, because you recall I'm an artist, I'm a visual artist myself, so
I remember
it's
that,
really
yeah.
funny, all your comparisons are very similar, and so cool to hear the creation of music to the creation of art. I mean, because it is an art, but like you were saying, you'd rather pick a few colors than a million colors in the palette, and that's like, okay, that's like literally what I do, because I don't usually paint with other colors. I want just my primary colors so I can create my own, so I can then turn and see that completely in the musical aspect, so that's just really cool.
Yeah, and, you know, if I was going to, like, and sort of continue that point, if I was going to give an example of a band that paints with a million colors musically, I would pick, like, a band like Radiohead, for example, where, you know, they have this huge sonic palette, you know, and that's, if that makes sense to you or I don't know anybody else who's
listening. No, that makes sense.
Like
yeah.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, every album you hear of theirs is, like, completely different, and, like, every song is completely different. And, but, yeah, no, that's, yeah, so I'm glad that made sense to somebody.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I can definitely hear, after you mentioned Genesis, I can definitely hear, like, I don't know what it is because I don't know the terms in music, and but I can definitely hear the influence from Genesis in there because I used to listen to Genesis, so that's just
well,
cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I hope, I hope it's, I mean, again, it'd be amazing if any of this music ever reached the ears of anybody in that band, but I hope it wouldn't piss them off if it does. You know, like, I hope they would see it as a sign of, you know, creative reverence rather than, you know, just straight up stealing.
It's so, it'd be flattery, right? I mean,
I hope but, so. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, today, the way things are today, and everybody's suing everybody for all these different songs, and you know,
yeah.
back in the classical era, you know, I mean, like, if you know, composers like Haydn and Mozart and Bach, and these people would borrow each other's melodies all the time.
Oh, absolutely!
Like straight up, they would steal each other's melodies, and then they would write their own composition based on that melody.
Oh,
but the melody was.
And that happened with quite a few very popular songs, too. I mean, what was that Vanilla Ice beat that was taken from?
But nowadays they sue you.
Yeah,
back
yeah,
then,
I
they,
know.
Back then it was flattery.
Back then it was like,
nowadays,
no, you
nowadays
you
it's litigious. So we'll see, you know. But, I mean, in my case, it's only ever
doing
done
is,
forever.
I think what you're doing is a bit different than theirs, so I think it's enough of a
well,
difference.
It's definitely not sampled, yeah. But, well, thank you, though. You're very sweet. Now I'll be looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah. So when you were writing the music, did you have any idea that you would be performing it?
No.
Live like you are now? I mean, because that's just...
One or two of the songs, yes. But as a whole, like those last two songs that he just played earlier, The Ghost Part 1 and 2,
yeah,
I never even thought about how we would play those live. They really were just supposed to be studio creations, which I never, to be honest with you, I've never really done that before. I've always ever, I mean, like, you know, the band Owl, you're very familiar with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And with that band, like, I'll record a million different guitar parts. You know, those records are very layered. Chris produces those. And that's the sound he likes, you know.
Yeah,
but even then, when
we're
recording those,
and even
when we're recording those, though, in the back of my mind is always like, okay, I got to create something that at least somehow there's a way to pull this off, you know, and you just sort
of
cherry pick the different elements. But in answer to your question, no, with this record, with a lot of the songs on this record, that actually was never, I didn't even think about it, which made it tricky.
yeah, well, afterwards you're should I have to repeat this and how am I going to create that? So that must have been quite the process. But I know you're talking about doing the looping and as you go. I've seen that done. Chris Cornell, I saw do that with several of his songs and some of the live shows he's done. And it's really cool to see that process. So, but I mean, the thought of trying to repeat something that you've made in the studio live. That's quite the process.
Yeah, there are more and more artists now that are doing this looping process. There's not a lot of artists that are doing it with a full band behind them. And that's where it gets tricky because, you know, the drummer has to really be, like, if I set a loop, the drummer has to be able to hear that. And when you're on stage
follow.
In some, you know, in Tuna Fish, Wyoming, and the you know, and like the monitor's terrible. You can't count on that. We've devised a little system where we bring our own microphones and throw them on the amps independent of the house setup. And then the drummer has earphones that he runs into. He's not playing to a click or anything, but he's just doing that so
he can focus
hear the
on
loops.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It can
yeah,
get...
With the drummer being back, I'm sure it's hard to hear what's going on. And
this music would not be possible without it. A great drummer, live.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it's definitely, there are a lot of technical hurdles. And it depends, you know, the other thing that changes too is how many guys are going out with me. I mean, ideally I would have a separate guy playing keyboards. For this tour, I'm not going to have that. It's just going to be the three of us. So for example, that first song, Ghost Part One, we actually can't even do that song. It's just, it's not possible. With Ghost Part Two, we are doing it, but we had to rearrange it. It's, when you hear it live, it'll be a little different. But it gets the feel across, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, good questions, though.
Well, anyways, I think that's really awesome that you're doing that and that you just went on that your little mini tour there and you're being successful with us, because it's just really cool sounding stuff.
Well,
thank you very much, and thank you with Owl again. So.
Yeah, Owl is, we don't have it set yet, but we're looking into December, maybe doing something on the East Coast. So obviously you'll hear about it.
Yeah,
I've
heard snippets of it from John. So.
Yeah, Owl will be back for sure.
Awesome, good.
All right, Angie. Well, wonderful talking to you, and I'll see you. I'll see you next month.
Great to catch up with you, Jason.
All right, see ya.
All right, bye.
Bye. That was nice.
All right, let's go to, yeah, that was nice. Let's go to caller 818-397. You're live.
What's up, guys?
Hey, what's up?
How we doing?
Hello.
Doing great.
Well, it's a pleasure to be able to chime in, listen to your story, man. You sound really talented, gifted, motivated. I was listening to the previous caller, and the whole stump box thing really reminded me a lot of the grunge era music. The Peugeot stuff you talked about. I used to own a EG-101 food board by Roland, so I was really into a lot of electronic stuff. But the whole synchronicity of the pedals reminded me a lot of what Kurt used to do with his band Nirvana, especially when it came to more of his insecticide outtakes and B-sides, or the front side of Nevermind. So that kind of music's always been something for me. And even Billy Corgan, before he went into wrestling, kind of did that a lot by himself with Jimmy, back when you could patch in through a keyboard instead of just relying on the stump boxes themselves. But they've now made pickups. Do you use that?
Say the last part again.
Do you use MIDI pickups?
No, I don't. That's a good question. That is one area of technology I have not gone into. I'm not sure really why, but I actually made a point of not using any MIDI on this record at all, either in the recording or in the live section. Also, and along those same lines, another way I could have done this that would have made it sound closer to the record live would have been to use tracks for, like, maybe pre-record the keyboard fluts and then just parts and then just have them play, you know, like a lot of bands do that. The reason, personally, I don't find that inspiring. Like, when I go see a band live, as soon as a track comes on, I feel like I'm cheering for a tape machine. And to me, that's not what I want. You know, like, I want to see something created. So even though it actually is a lot more difficult to create it in the live scenario, I stick to doing it that way just because, personally, that's what I would want to see. And I know different people want to see different things.
So you perform it almost in a Dorsey or Jimi Hendrix fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Much more of an old school approach, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the route me and my band actually went when we were doing our thing, Skin and Bones of the Bleeding Orchid. Want to check that out. A lot of our stuff is just done traditionally live and still marketed.
That's awesome.
A full-fledged album. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, but, you know, it. I mean, I can't say what's right or wrong for other people, but, you know, for me, yeah, it's just, and it's kind of exciting, you know, like every night I get on stage and, you know, there's a lot of times I hit that pedal and I miss it. Like, when I play live with this band, I play barefoot just because I like to. And because of that, I literally have hit the pedal, the looper pedal, and the button went between my toes, and I missed the pedal. And then so you have to just loop the part and do it again, and your band is looking at you like they're still playing, but they're like, dude, what the hell are you doing? You screwed up. And you're like, I know, don't worry about it. And so it's exciting, though. It keeps, and so as long as the guys you're on stage with are good enough and they're tight and everybody knows the stuff, they can get back on course. But you can have, like, potential train wreck turn into some inspired new moment live, because now you're working out of desperation, you know, like, shit, I can't drop the song. I can't drop the groove. I got to get to the melody. And, you know, when there's 300 people in front of you, it's exciting, you know.
Right. Well, I tell you what, Skin and Bones of the Bone Thug family, which is a close family member, friend to Mr. Houdini, wants to say publicly that he would look forward to doing some collaborations, because I like your spirit and your attitude, and I like the way you're going about music, and I feel like it kind of has a Radiohead-esque Billy Corgan vibe to it. So.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks so much for calling.
No doubt. Appreciate you. Thanks, Houdini.
Well, I appreciate you listening. Thank you so much.
No problem.
All right, look to actually collab with you in the future, man. Do your thing.
Cheers. Thank you. That's awesome.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, my friend, so much once again for your time. As always, I want to leave you with the ability to say anything else that you would like to add at the end of this interview on the Vigilantes Radio open floor, where you got the freedom to mention anything else at all that you would like to, that maybe I didn't bring up in this interview, or anything else on your mind that you want to say to the people. All the best to you, Jason. So the best of luck, man. And the open floor is yours.
Well, cheers.
Anything to add? Like, you say anything, man.
Gosh, you know, I don't know. I just, you know, all the people listening, I mean, if you like what you hear, please pick up a copy of the records on iTunes. I think you have all the links, right, on the website there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so, you know, buy the record. Please join. I have a mailing list if anybody wants to go on to the website. There's a mailing list there. I don't spam anybody, but I will email out the tour dates. I'll send up notices for when there's new stuff available. And I guess all I would really want to add is just that, I mean, that's either for me or any independent artist that you like, if you're out there listening, the best thing you can do is sign up and get involved with that artist and show them that you care, because it means a lot. I mean, and that's, especially at this stage, you know, that's what keeps us going, you know, and for me, is going to keep me wanting to do this, is knowing that it's reaching, touching people like that gentleman who just called, you know. That was amazing, you know, and that's the whole reason for it. Like, if I was just making music for myself, I'd just stay in my garage or my basement and I'd do it myself. I wouldn't be out here, you know, trying to put records out and spending thousands of dollars to press vinyl and all this stuff. So support your artists. That's the last thing I'll say about it.
Definitely. Jason, I have one last question for you. Do you know about our hot seat?
I do, yeah. So... yeah, she. So when we set up the interview, yeah, she said you could do anything you want, but I don't really know what to do. I mean, the only thing I could really do is play music, and I can't do that over the phone. So I don't really know. I'm not sure how much time would we have left. I wouldn't really know what to put in there.
We have all the time in the world, my friend. Just
oh,
to give
man.
Some examples of what some of the guests done before, like we've had one guy just jump on a piano. He did the interview with us in a cafe, and in the middle of his hot seat time, he jumped on a piano. He like sat the phone down and started, you know, singing the song that he had just wrote about an hour or two ago. Another guy last week, he jumped on his guitar.
I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna tell you a joke. That's
okay.
What I'm gonna do.
Well,
all right.
Before we do that, let's cut to some more of your music, and when we come back, we'll put Jason in our hot seat and see what he got.
It's going to be a short hot seat. It's going to be like 2 minutes, but I'll tell you guys a joke.
All right, cool, dude. Here's Jam Panhandle. Mm-hmm. Jason has.
We're back.
What it takes to be in our infamous hot seat. Take it away, Jason.
All right. I should just preface this by saying I'm terrible at telling jokes, but okay, here goes. So this is the story of the Lone Ranger and Tonto, right? So I think everybody knows Lone Ranger, you know, cowboy from the West, and Tonto is horribly stereotyped Indian sidekick, right? So they're out in the range one day, and, you know, they've been running around battling evil or whatever the heck they do, and they're camped out for the night. They're around the fire, and the Lone Ranger goes, and he's gathering some firewood, and he bends over to get a stick of firewood to throw in the fire, and this rattlesnake shoots out and bites him right down there, right in the privates. Gets a good chunk right there. Lone Ranger goes down screaming in pain, right? Calls over Tonto. Tonto runs over and says, "Kimosabi, what is the matter?" And Lone Ranger says, "This snake just bit me right in the Johnson. Go ride to town, get help, get the doctor, find out what to do. I'm going to die here." So Tonto, you know, he looks at him and says, "Yes, Kimosabi, I ride." So he jumps on his horse and he tears off into town. He goes and he rides and he gets to the local, you know, little tombstone kind of encampment, and he finds the doctor, the town doctor. It's the middle of the night. He's banging on the doctor's door. Finally, the doctor answers. He rubs his eyes, and Tonto says, "Lone Ranger, the Lone Ranger has been bitten by a snake. What must I do?" And the doctor says, "Oh, he's out there all alone. He got bit by the snake. Well, you know what? All you can do, you have to go back there, and you have to suck the poison out and hope for the best." And Tonto, kind of like, oh, he thinks about that for a minute. Like, oh, okay. So he gets back on his horse. He says, "Okay, I ride." And he rides back to the Lone Ranger. It's been, you know, a good half hour now. The Lone Ranger's, like, turning green. He doesn't have long to live. And he says, Tonto, did you go to the doctor? What did he say?" And Tonto comes over, he looks at him, he says, "Yes, I saw the doctor." He says, "Well, what did he say? Tonto looks at the Lone Ranger, he says, "Doctor says you're going to die." That's a joke. I don't know. I probably told it terribly, but I think it's funny. So there you go.
No, that was cool. All right. All right, man. Like I said, man, I definitely appreciate you for coming on our show. But we are at the end, the infamous end of our interview here. Is there anything at all that you would like to add before we sign off?
No, that's it, man. I am done. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks to everybody for listening, and I hope everybody just enjoys the music, and I really look forward to getting out there and playing in front of as many of you as possible.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, folks, thank you as always for checking out our podcast over here at Vigilantes Radio. All episodes are free for download once the show ends, and that includes all of our past shows as well. If you like to request music or send something for us to play, email it to bradio@onlyonemediagroup.com. We are genre-free, we do not judge, and we absolutely do not base our opinions on hearsay but facts. And actually, that is total BS, because anything I say is always right. And remember that. So, from the bottom of my heart, and on behalf of myself, Houdini Black or Dini Mussolini, or just Demetrius, whichever you prefer, we definitely appreciate you for tuning in, either afterwards or live with us. Make sure you spread the word, and also a special thanks to our guest tonight, Jason, for coming in to speak with us. Make sure you click the link on episode info and get all of his social media information, like his website, it's Twitter, it's Facebook, Instagram, and the link to the album. We'll get the album. With that said, just remember to be great and be yourself. Good night. Oh, and while we go out, let's listen to my favorite song. This is Jam with Tokyo Drift. Ha ha.